I don't know if you can pull all these things out of the bottom of your purse or your pockets or your desk or your kitchen counter. To-do lists everywhere. I have them everywhere. I assume most of you as well. Work lists, shopping lists, people to call. Or maybe you have an email inbox like mine, where about every 15th email is from me, and the subject line in caps is to do. Maybe you send yourself texts, fill your task list on your Google Calendar, maybe write them on your hand, I don't know. Projects to finish, supplies needed, what to pick up at Trader Joe's, household tasks, forms to fill out, dentist appointments to reschedule. And there's always some little post-it in your pocket that says, Target, remember, bleh, and you don't know what it says, you can't read your writing, or you can't remember, what did I need there, I don't know. Perhaps years from now, an archaeologist could go through all your many physical and virtual lists, all the things you needed to remember for the day and for the week, for the month, and learn about your life. The question is, what is on your to-do lists, and would it help anyone understand what you are living for, about what gives you purpose in life? When you look over all the lists and notes to self, how many of the items are there because they are truly fulfilling to you? None? Do you have lists everywhere reminding yourself of things you need to be sure to do, and not one of those items is related to why you are here? What brings meaning to your life? What nurtures your soul? Well, that might be a problem. When I worked as a hospital chaplain, I remember one of the physical therapists who worked with the inpatients, and she would come in, very high energy, and say, so before we begin, can you share why you're doing all this? Why have you had this surgery, and why are you going through all these many weeks of difficult physical therapy? A number of especially elderly patients would say, I want to be able to go home so I can wash my own dishes, or I want to be able to change my sheets by myself. And she would respond, nope, nobody's living life so they can wash dishes or do laundry. That is not a reason to live. You have to do better than that. When I first heard her go into this routine, it sounded very harsh. Wasn't living independently enough of a reason to go through all this? But as I kept thinking about it, I realized that she was right. Cleaning your own toilet is a terrible answer to why am I alive? It is instead a means to an end. She would continue to push until she got them to share something of substance. Maybe their goal as they go through these difficult physical trials is going home to read new books and learning new things, spending time with grandchildren, taking care of pets, volunteering for a cause, voting in the next election. These are actual core goals they are working so hard to return to. So why do they need so much coaching and direct challenging to figure that out? And why do we? Our checklists and our to-do lists are filled with means to an end. But where is and what is the actual end that we're working toward? Means alone do not a life make. Where in your reminder notes is the thing that gives you meaning? Where is the passion that drives you? The skill or the gift or the talent that you love to use to enhance the lives of others, the dream you would love to realize. It could be any number of things, but it most likely is not defrosting the chicken or picking up the dry cleaning. In the biblical book of Kohelet, or in Ecclesiastes, we read, "Whatever it is that you find within you to do well, with your talent, your strength, your passion, you should do it. For once you are gone, you will not be able to pursue it." This is a central message of our Yom Kippur day. The timer is ticking on our lives. To what are we devoting the precious hours and days that we will never get back? Israeli-born Harvard professor of positive psychology, Tal Ben Shahar, taught this in his book, Happier. "To be happy, it is not enough to experience our life as meaningful on the general level of the big picture. We need to find meaning on the very specific level of our daily existence as well." So what might this look like? Your big picture life dream might be, "I am truly motivated in life by the thought of helping move us toward world peace." Cool. So what are you doing on a daily basis to further your vision? How can you break down this big, large, overarching dream into small, doable pieces, regularly weaving them into your weekly tasks, ensuring that they end up on your list or on your calendar? Your focus may be parenting your children. Is your week a constant blur of checklists and chauffeur duties? Or is there time set aside each day to be fully present with them, to just enjoy them for who they are, to step back, to bear witness to their uniqueness, their perspectives, their life passions? Could this be on your list? You went into a field that was of great interest to you and then discovered as time went on that your days were actually filled with administrative duties, logistical details, online paperwork. Is there a way to remember what appealed to you about your career and make adjustments? Regularly scheduling on your calendar the part of the job that you love for even just a little bit of time each day or each week. We read in the Torah that Abraham died old and contented. The obvious question of our tradition, what does it mean that when he died, he was content? Nachmanides, a commentator from the 13th century, teaches, "Abraham died content because he saw all the longings of his heart come to pass." In other words, Abraham tended not just to his physical needs, but he nurtured his soul and pursued what truly brought him fulfillment. The journalist David Brooks spent most of his adult life focused on furthering his career, publishing books, writing columns in the New York Times, making a name for himself. He calls this phase of his life the first mountain. His personal career goal was for years the one and only peak that he could see and toward which he climbed. Then his marriage fell apart. He had never really focused time and efforts on his family. It was only when he found himself on his own, removed from his wife and children, that he hit emotional bottom. He realized that he had been living to feed his ego, but his inner being was being starved. He began opening his eyes to the people around him, not as simply tools to move himself forward, but as actual human beings to be appreciated. He started thinking about faith and what he believed about his place and his peace in the larger world. In Brooks's words, "Something has to happen for you to live at the center of yourself and not at the surface of yourself. The focus on your spiritual center, relationships, and the major concerns of life is what Brooks calls the second mountain. And the pursuit of climbing and living on this second mountain aligns with what research has proven. A true, full sense of happiness and contentment is a result of belonging to and serving something beyond yourself. As Brooks describes it, living within your heart and soul, longing for others, and longing to do something good. Living deeply can be dismissed and ignored for a time, but eventually our deep-seated need to have our lives truly matter to family, to friends, to community must be addressed. There is only so long we can be happy before a gaping emptiness emerges. This is the time to make teshuva, to turn ourselves, literally the word means to turn ourselves, our efforts, our time toward what brings us meaning and fulfillment and purpose. Can we make adjustments so that our life's priorities become visible in our planners, in our calendars, in our scribbled down lists? If you don't have cereal for a couple of days, there won't be any lasting effect. If you starve your soul for days or weeks, it can prove truly devastating to your well-being. In 1912, women across the country were fighting for acknowledgement of their right to vote. As part of that campaign, Jewish activist and labor leader Rose Schneiderman gave the following bit of speech at an Ohio rally. "What the woman who labors wants is the right to live, not simply exist. The right to a full life, as the rich woman has the right to life and the sun and music and art. There is nothing you have that the humblest worker has not a right to also have. The worker must have bread, but she must have roses too." Bread, but also roses. This became a widely known slogan and even the title of a popular song. A life that is strictly about acquiring bread is not a life. It is an existence. Life contains more. Life involves the pursuit of beauty, of relationship, of fulfillment. Life involves an understanding of our own heart and being able to use that understanding to connect with others, to leave this world a little better than we found it. In this new year, may our to-do lists not only contain bread, but roses too.